This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good evening, you're with Caroline and Ezra, and this evening we'll be speaking about children in detention.
That's right. So the Rohingya refugee crisis is one that still continues to play out in the media. As we know, about 1,158 migrants landed in Langkawi. This was a while ago. And as a result, Malaysia's role as temporary hosts for them was thrust into the spotlight. So we're taking a look at our own backyard to play some context around what happens to these migrants when they're in the country.
Here in the studio to shed some light on the issue of children in detention centres is Mr. James Nayagam. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
So just to provide some context for our listeners, I mean, how many children in detention centres are we talking about here?
We're talking about 1,200, and by now I would reckon it's gone up to about 1,005. And about 50 to 60% are Rohingya children. Out of this, you'll find that it's also divided, that some are with their parents, and together in the same boat are unaccompanied minors as well. And in addition to all of this, you find victims of human trafficking as well.
And we're speaking about children and, I guess, minors. I mean, we're speaking about children, those below the age of 18?
That's right.
Okay, and how many detention centres are we talking about spread out throughout the country?
Oh, well, you're talking about 24 or 25 detention centres.
And they vary in size?
They do, depending on the land area.
Right. Can you give us some idea of what a typical camp would house?
Well, if you were to go into a typical camp, there you find the main block, and then you'll find like long houses where people are put together. If it's men, it's like a large hall.
Mm-hmm.
And so everyone lives as a community, as in that hall, and women and children together, in some areas where young boys and men together as well, and very, very basic facilities. So they exist in a longish hall kind of setting.
And maybe you can walk us through as to how the system is in place that gets them there. I mean, what sort of system or policy is in place that gets these kids into these areas?
Well, first thing is, of course, let's start with the present day situation. If they land on the shores of Malaysia, then they are taken to these camps and they are kept there. Secondly, wherever there is a raid in a community or in a shop lot or whatever, when people are, the families are taken in, including the children, because you can't detain adults alone, but then they are with the children as well. So families are taken in. What actually happens is this. When all of these things are basically temporary measures, with that in mind, basically detention centres are only temporary measures.
Or they're meant to be. Meant to be temporary measures. However, a few weeks ago when we had you on the show, we did mention that there are three or four generations living in there, or they have been.
Yes. So, a minimum, there would be children and families who have been there for now 2 years. Simply because we're talking about Rohingyas. Rohingyas where Myanmar government refuses to accept them. And if the country of origin refuses to accept them, then where else are they going to go? Here we are, landed with this community, nowhere to go. They cannot be let out again. And on humanitarian grounds, they're kept within a protective area. But then what are the long-term plans for these people in terms of resettlement? As I said, they're already been there for 2 years. Now, it's all nice and lovey-dovey to talk about this wonderful fantasy of resettling them. But, as I said, the Rohingyas have been here for the fourth generation. So that alone is a track record that should guide us in looking at possible solutions.
And I guess the lack of possible solutions in this time thus far, what does that speak of in terms of whatever bilateral efforts between the two countries? I mean, it's amazing after all these years, nothing has moved in that respect.
You know, I would think that we in the ASEAN region are very friendly, sensitive, and so we don't want to get in step on other one another's toes. So therefore, it has been mutual. But this mutual, you know, non-confrontational of issues is landing us with problems, long-term fetched problems. We are receiving now possibly another 7,000 on our shores. So it's time we all sat down and took each other very seriously. And we have dealt, we have to take the Myanmar government to task. And I would say Thailand, Indonesia, Philippines, and all these countries get together to the discussion table and take these countries to task.
Right. But for, I suppose for what we can control within our shores, which is what we're going to we were talking about essentially this evening, about immigration detention systems. From what I understand, once they're in the country, they are considered illegal immigrants. It doesn't matter that they're asylum seekers. It doesn't matter if they're not here by choice. Is that correct?
Yeah, Malaysia, because Malaysia has not signed the 1951 Convention on the Refugees. And therefore, however you... You can term it refugees or are taken as illegal immigrants, except they carry a registration card. They are allowed to stay here, but they are not allowed to work or attend school.
And of course, that becomes a problem once it extends beyond one generation, right?
Yeah.
And how exactly can it be improved upon, even in small in small ways? And do you see any change happening?
Okay. First of all, we've got to come to the point in time, we've got to settle things in our minds. Number one, that is, they're not going to go anywhere. Like I've mentioned, track record shows that they're here for in the fourth generation. Number two, having to realize that, then that gives us the perception, the mind, the guide, what now should we do? Hmm. We have two categories of persons. We have the adults and the children. The adults, all right? What is the best thing that we can do? Generally, is offer them opportunities for employment so that they're able to work. Then you don't have this thing about illegal workers and so on, and raids and so on. So you end that. You allow them to work and contribute to the economy of the country positively. What about children? Like I said, they're in the fourth generation. Therefore, for purposes of safety in terms of the whole society. If you have children who don't attend school, have no vocational training, ill health, then what happens? So we must be able to foresee in 5 years, 6 years, 10 years' time, our society is going to be filled with kids. Best thing to give them, according to the conventional rights of children, is that for their best interest. One, education, protection, health. Therefore, we must be able to allow them to attend school, be able to provide vocational training. If we do all of these things, then we are less dependent on importing labor from other countries.
How much of these things do we do within these centers? I mean, you read news from time to time, don't you? You have individual NGO groups going in and trying to educate these children and that sort of thing. Is that a fact?
Oh, yes. For instance, there's a society called Sukha Society that is in the now discussing with the government, where they are offering the government an opportunity to take these kids and resettle them with the community and using things like fostering of children and so on. It has worked very well in Hong Kong, so they're trying to follow a similar kind of pattern here as a form of an alternative to children in detention, ATD. So in that way, there's a possible long-term solution. You take the kids out, sell them in society, because kids have not committed anything yet. Detention means someone has breached a law. But then when you have kids in detention, it implies that kids have actually committed something, but they are not the ones. It's the parents. So generally, worldwide, kids don't belong to detention centers. there must be an alternative for looking at the best interest, that is, their development, which is a paramount in this.
And when it comes to Malaysia living up to its obligations as a signatory of the United Nations Conventions on the Rights of Children, I mean, there's a lot to do, I imagine, but are there sort of small, short-term goals that they can sort of live up to?
Well, here again, I must comment. When we drafted the Child Act, which is 2001 Act, it was fashioned after the Convention on the Rights of the Child, okay? As Malaysia's commitment to the signing of the convention. The word mentioned there is child. And the definition of the child means any child. That act came into being, into practice, because Malaysia is committed to protecting any child. So that child in the detention centre
is entitled to the same rights every child in Malaysia is.
What we need to do now is recognize that. Recognize that there's a difference between someone who's committed a offence under the Immigration Act and don't allow such a child to be brought onto that act. Bring the child under the Child Act. When you bring a child under the Child Act, then that best interest of the child is taken into account. So we need to practice it.
But what's preventing us from reconciling that? Because it seems...
It seems like a simple thing to do, and yet it's not being done.
Well, if you applied some sort of sense of human decency and common sense, I mean, that would be the way to go. But what's preventing us from doing that?
Perception. The local perception is, hey, we are Malaysians. We are entitled to all these rights. That's a foreigner. You're not entitled to this. You know, you're different. You're not part of this. You should not enjoy the same benefits as us. So that's perhaps maybe the perception that people have. But then, again, you have to mean what you say. You know, there must be some commitment to receiving them because they're already here. They are in our midst. We have got to change our perception. At the end of the day, who are they going to be the recipients of the future generation? The change in society. Now you have children. You take a pebble and throw, you know, our work force itself with 35% foreign labour. That's quite a significant percentage. Therefore, we also have children. What more, if we're talking about Malaysia as a whole, we have children in Sabah and Sarawak who run into the hundreds of thousands who are also undocumented. So we've got to come to a point in time looking at children, looking at society, looking in a positive way at the future. You provide a child with an education, you're teaching him to fish. You're teaching him to be responsible. That is why we really seriously need to consider the application and practice of the Child Act to its word.
Are there other communities or societies outside of Malaysia, maybe in the Southeast Asian region, that are perhaps more, that they lean towards this kind of attitudes that we're speaking about?
As in they embrace it easier?
Well, if not embracing, at least are making strides in dealing with it, at least.
The closest example that I can come across is Indonesia, because in my recent dialogues with various groups and so on, they have mentioned Indonesia being open to allowing children being members of their community. So when we studied centres in Indonesia, we are realising that they're moving forward into progressive realisation, that is, accepting children to be settled in their society, in the communities.
Why do you think that's the case for Indonesia and not so much Malaysia?
Or is there something there that's worked, that they've just come across?
I think basically the change of mindset, a paradigm shift.
Is it cultural to a degree?
Possible, yes. Yes, you're right. And so we likewise have to come to realisation that this is what we need to do. Because the previous form of thinking is not working as to the present.
And so what are some of Suhakam's recommendations to solve the children in detention problem?
First of all, let's not have children in detention.
It's a good start.
That's it. Number two, recognise that children should be accorded the protection, the necessary rights according to the Convention on the Rights of a Child. Number three, there must be a follow-up mechanism to track the well-being of these children. There must be this commitment to ensure the rights of children, ensure that they are accorded proper development and there are ways that they can be developed into a normal human being. And also time frame. You see, we are also very traditionally people who make statements, but then that statement is open-ended. For instance, we are thinking about doing something, we are planning to do something, we have a committee to look into it, we are hoping to amend our laws, but
no resolution.
No resolution. There's no time frame. So Swakam is saying, look, when you make such statements, there must be a follow-up. There must be a tracking system. There must be a tracking system to implement those recommendations. We don't want to reinvent the wheel as well.
Well, James, thank you very much for spending some time speaking to us about the issue of child refugees in detention centres. In the studio with us is James Nayagam, Commissioner with the Human Rights Commission of Malaysia, or Suhakam. If you miss any part of this program, you can download the podcast at www.bfm.my.
Thank you.
It's the evening edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.